With our very special reporter, Linda Moulton-Howe, with us tonight. Up next, we talk about hybrids, an incredible story on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton-Howe with us with an incredible story of hybrids. Linda, tell us about this story and how you got into it.
Well, back in the fall of 1979, I was director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, Colorado, and my crew and I traveled to Dulce, New Mexico, where rancher Manuel Gomez had several cattle mutilations on his ranch within a single year, all neatly bloodless, but not all trackless. Near one of the mutilated animals in the dusty pasture ground were a series of strange round indents, as if golf balls in two parallel lines had been put next to each other in the dust. Around Dulce, the Yikaria Apache natives who lived there pointed to the sky and said their ancestors, the star people, were the ones doing the animal mutilations. Back then was the first time that I heard about the possibility of a large multi-level Dulce underground where gray extraterrestrials did genetic experiments for reasons unknown. 3 years before then, in 1976, Oriental Studies and Sanskrit scholar Robert Temple released his now classic, The Serious Mystery, Was Earth Visited by Intelligent Beings from a Planet in the System of the Star Sirius? That sun, Sirius, is twice as massive as our sun. It is only 8.6 light years from Earth. And it is the brightest star in our planet's night sky. In fact, its name comes from the ancient Greek serios, that means glowing or scorcher. Temple reported about the work of French anthropologists who spent the years of 1915 to 1930 living among tribes in West Africa, including the Dogon tribe. That tribe had sketches of Sirius and a second star, the Dogon said, was very small, but very heavy, white in color, and was invisible to human eyes as it moved around Sirius in an elliptical orbit that took 50 years. The Dogon also said that the gods who had made them in West Africa were from Sirius. That invisible star with exactly that kind and length of elliptical orbit around Sirius was not discovered until January 31, 1862, by a telescope maker in Massachusetts. Little did I know back in 1979 that by 2014, a military whistleblower would link the stars Sirius A and B along with another binary star system, Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, with a humanoid exodus from those solar systems to Mars in this solar system, followed by another panicked migration from Mars to Earth. Or that the original progenitor race of beings from Zeta Reticuli and Sirius B would terraform and genetically manipulate Earth life, and that the progenitors would become the original Anunnaki in Mesopotamia. The Anunnaki would then make two different alien hybrids, a tall, pale-skinned race with light eyes, and a shorter, gray-skinned race with dark eyes and vertical pupils like a snake or a cat. And you can see an illustration of one of these particular grays from a photograph taken in Dulce, New Mexico, according to the Colonel. And this is at earthfiles.com right now in the report that I have done on this Dulce whistleblower. The tall, pale-bodied hybrids then manipulated DNA in already evolving hybrids to create standing up primates on Earth to work for them and be managed by the gray hybrids that would be assigned to underground territories near Dulce, New Mexico. This is the short summary of what a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel told UFO investigator Anthony Sanchez in a recorded interview on January 6 to 8, 2010. The colonel was willing to take two lie detector polygraphs, which he passed, and by 2011, Anthony released the revelations from this colonel in a groundbreaking book entitled UFO Highway, The Dulce Interview. Now, some listeners will consider this as fable. Others, perhaps, can hear what comes next as startling facts learned by a military officer. And it all began for Anthony Sanchez when he was working for a major computer company back in 2006 between San Jose and Mountain View, California. Here now is Anthony Sanchez from Rockland, California.
I was working for a major semiconductor firm out of the Silicon Valley in 2006-2007. At that time, I was in charge of over 300 servers for the division that I worked for. Many of the divisions there had their own personal intranet servers, and on mine, I hosted a blog. I researched UFOs, I researched human origins and some aspects of the paranormal. So I shared my information with friends and colleagues. One of them in particular was very, very interested in my knowledge of the military-industrial complex and the subject of UFOs. Over the course of 6 months, it became clear to me that his interest was based on something that was going on in his life. I come to learn that he worked on a project out of Moffett Field, which was a multifaceted weapon system. There was some sort of an array. One day he just disappeared from the company. There was no trace of this person at all. What I learned is that he was AWOL at that point, and when he was at the semiconductor firm, he was under an assumed identity already at that point in his life.
He was trying to escape military something?
He was trying to hide from the powers that be and the project that he had worked under. I didn't learn all the details until he and I met a year later at Moffett Field, which is in Mountain View, California, near the NASA Ames Research Facility.
Okay, now are we in the year 2007 or 2008?
We're in the year 2008 at this point.
How did you come to cross paths with him a year later if he disappeared from the semiconductor company and you knew that he was running from something in the military?
Strangely enough, when we worked together, we worked in a test validation center. It's a technical area where they're testing integrated circuits and whatnot. It's a lab environment. He had the phone number to the lab, and he called that number. And it was like receiving a phone call from a ghost. It was through that phone call that we were able to reestablish a connection and ultimately meet later that evening, as a matter of fact. 1 o'clock in the morning, I found myself driving to Mountain View, California.
What did he say to you on the phone that would provoke you to do this?
He told me why he had secretly left the company where we were at, and he gave me all the details of why he was running from this other defense contractor where he had been a high-level software engineer. I knew that this was something very serious that was occurring in his life, and he wanted to share some information with me desperately. It had to do with this weapon system that had some alien component to it and potentially physical alien beings. That's what pulled me in, and I had to see him. Unfortunately, what I learned was is that people on the project where he had been working had begun to disappear, and some of them had ended up dead. They killed themselves, is what he would say. When they began asking too many questions, they turned up suicided in their vehicle. The GPS coordinates to the location where we met that evening took me to a parking lot outside of an abandoned McDonald's in Moffett Field that was being retrofitted. I guess there were hundreds of thousands of hours of film for the Apollo missions, classified stuff. He is the individual that put me in contact with the colonel. So my information that I had put online, I guess this person had copied it, saved it, and archived it. He shared it with the colonel, and the colonel was interested in some of the findings that I had made with regards to alien-human hybridization. That's why the colonel wanted to speak with me, and ultimately he shared his time at Dulce with me.
In this first 1 a.m. discussion, what did he say about the multifaceted weapons, and what precisely was the extraterrestrial alien component.
He told me about a project that he had worked on called Leonid. Leonid was an acronym that stood for Low Earth Orbit Nanosatellite Interceptor Defense, a multifaceted weapons system that had multiple components. The most intriguing aspect was this nanosatellite component, where he spoke of these swarms or constellations of nanosatellites that had an artificial intelligence component. These were self-replicatable, self-repairable nanosatellites. They provided telemetry, like for a guidance system, for low Earth orbit drones. Do you recall the X-37 from Boeing?
Yes.
Which was up in low Earth orbit for 287 days on a classified mission that we never actually knew what it was doing, but we knew it was up there?
Exactly.
It is my understanding the X-37B was a delivery system used to deploy these nanosatellites that are now in orbit around Earth. The alien component is the technology that goes into the nanosatellites.
How big?
Like half the size of a Rubik's Cube. About 1.5 by 1.5 inches. Some satellites can be the size of a school bus. So when you have hundreds of satellites that are 1.5 inches squared, refer to them as nanosatellites.
So you're talking with him about these nanosatellites that contain some sort of extraterrestrial alien technology. What is that?
What we're talking about is a stealth microfighter / shuttle hybrid with an onboard laser-guided weapon system. This was developed by the Naval Auxiliary Air Station at San Nicolas Island. That's off the coast of Southern California, involving a fleet of UOVs, unmanned orbital vehicles. These are referred to as interceptors.
What was this weapon system designed to fire at? What is the perceived enemy?
That's the interesting aspect, because one of the things that I was told is they are meant to target things that are inbound from space.
Did he define for you then who the target would be coming in from outer space into Earth?
Yes, he did. He said to me, I quote, "There is an alien component on this planet who is already working in collusion with the Chinese, and there is a forthcoming space war." Those were his exact words. There is a forthcoming space war. The United States has a team of U.S. defense contractors developing technologies for that space war.
Which outer space intelligence that is working with the Chinese that we consider to be a threat, and we have this new weapon system to aim at them? What do they look like?
They look like us.
In what way?
These are alien-human hybrids. This is where it gets strange, Linda. Living amongst us is an alien-human hybrid race. A long time ago, there was a group called the Progenitors that came to our solar system. They inhabited Mars until something cataclysmic happened on Mars. It forced them underground on Mars, and after several thousand years, they made their way to Earth. Earth was not the ideal place for their genetic makeup, at which point this group, these Progenitors, started to modify their genetic makeup and subsequently bred offspring that had a better chance of surviving on Earth. Over time, these offspring were forced to interbreed with humans. These alien-human hybrids still exist to this day. They carry a genetic component that shows their alien origins. Not all humans have this alien origin. Very confusing, because all modern humans have been genetically modified. This is the information that was shared with me.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we saw these exponential levels in our evolution by comparison to other animals on this planet. This is because some 250,000 years ago, we were genetically modified so that we would become upright, highly intelligent, and capable of working for these aliens. Prior to that point, we were not capable of servicing these aliens. These aliens created a subcaste called Greys, Ijijis. So when I'm talking about the Progenitors, I'm referring to the Anunnaki. That is exactly who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The alien-human hybrid group that exists today, these are the descendants of the Anunnaki.
Did either one of these men give you a timeline in which the progenitors left Mars and arrived at Earth? And what time in Earth's timeline did the progenitors start creating grays, various standing up primates, and so forth?
Yeah, this was in the conversation that I had with the colonel. The colonel gave me the timeline. The information that I received from the colonel is that this progenitor group left the Sirius system, and a million years ago, they arrived to our solar system. For 100,000 years, they lived on Mars. Mars, there was this cataclysmic event that affected Mars. I believe it was asteroids. It affected the atmosphere. So 900,000 years later, they came to Earth. And during that entire time, they struggled to survive on Earth. And about 250,000 years ago, the progenitors themselves actually died away. And it was their descendants, who the colonel referred to as the Astra Albus, which are essentially the descendants of these Anunnaki progenitors, and began to thrive on Earth. They also created the Greys at that point, referred to as the Ijiji, or the Loa Greys. Now, they were created as a subcaste, no genetic makeup with the progenitors. All of the genetic factors in creating the Greys was sourced through alien genetic materials, and it wasn't until much later that the Greys used Earth-based genetic materials to continue propagating.
Now, George, this is a lot to absorb, but there are so many pieces of this that fit and bring into focus parts of the puzzle that I've heard over the last 35 years, that I'm hoping that the audience will go to my news website, Earth Files, and take a look at the transcript of what Anthony has just said and look at the images that I have in this part one having to do with carvings that we have had in museums from Iran and Iraq and Mesopotamia for a long time. One of them is identified as the Sumerian Inanna. And Anthony and I have been exchanging emails about when you look back through this lens that the Anunnaki were a direct bloodline from extraterrestrials from first Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 and then going to Sirius and then to Mars and then to Earth, and having the problem of survival and having to extend their civilization into something they could make that could be strong enough to deal with the oxygen and the Earth that we live on now, and that these characters that we have in stone of the Anunnaki are actually the first line of a new bloodline created by this race that he calls the progenitors, the colonel does. And then as you go from there and you start looking at the stones carved of the so-called Sumerian gods that are always featured as being much larger than the roly-poly small humans that are around, even to one of the Akhenaten and Nefertiti, the beautiful carving showing their three children, all with these very long, long swept-back heads, that they, too, the Egyptians and the Greeks, were supposed to be part of a hybridization that started out with an extraterrestrial group that wanted to preserve its bloodline, even though it died out and left a very specific hybrid race in its place that has been trying to protect its bloodline through the chaos of so many hybrids and clones. And this is sort of what Helen Luttrell was telling us when I did that interview 3 or 4 months ago. And when we come back, we're going to continue this amazing story.
It sure is, and we will. Well, next hour, Conversations with Linda. We'll take your phone calls, stories, questions, you name it. She'll have it for you on Coast to Coast AM, and we will be right back with more on this incredible story of hybrids. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and of course, Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, I'll let you continue with this truly strange but incredible story.
Right, and timelines. I ask Anthony if the colonel tried to help him understand what kind of timelines we're talking about. And where we start this half hour is around the 250,000-year-ago mark. And according to the colonel and what our government allegedly knows about this, we'll call it an exodus that started from Zeta Reticuli 1 to Sirius to Mars and then to Earth, that the progenitors, the original ones, they literally died out on this planet. Apparently, we are made and adapted to the Earth, but that other life forms just running around in the sun and in the air and the water here, it could be very rough. And the progenitors died out, leaving behind for them to keep things going their bloodline, the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki started hybridizing their own. So where Anthony starts here with the colonel's story, 250,000 years ago, the progenitors have died, and now here we go forward with Anthony Sanchez.
Things culminated at the 250,000-year mark, which was the Greys began to manage humans, and the progenitors died off, the Australbus remained, and humans were genetically modified to begin servicing both the Greys and these Anunnaki offspring.
The Albus were defined as what physically?
They were the first Anunnaki-human hybrid. That was something they never wanted to do. The progenitors, when they began modifying their own genetic makeup so that subsequent generations would be able to survive on Earth, they never intended to interbreed with humans. They never intended to borrow DNA from humans. It wasn't until much later when subsequent generations of Anunnaki continued to die off, they realized they needed to incorporate a human genetic component in their own genome and their own genetic structure so that they could survive. And those people today, those alien-human hybrids, those are the descendants of the Anunnaki. Those are the Australbus.
What do they look like?
They look just like you and me. Where they differ is they carry a genetic component that clearly shows their alien origin. And they are very, very controlling about their bloodlines. They have very strict protocols about how they propagate.
Would that fit in with the whole concept of royal bloodlines?
Absolutely. Royal bloodlines and extremely wealthy bloodlines.
Do they have any specific physical characteristics?
None that I'm aware of, because my understanding is that they have successfully propagated around the planet, and there's no specific physical trait that sets them apart from humans. There are Chinese, there are Latin Americans, there are Europeans that belong to this tightly controlled bloodline. It is a genetic component, and it's not necessarily limited to one specific group.
Why in your book are they referenced in relationship to the interview with the colonel as being, quote, light bringers or illumina?
I think that has to do with the fact that over time, these groups have emerged, these secret societies have emerged, one of them being the Illuminati.
Are they tall whites?
Some possibly could be.
Are they tall blondes?
I believe so.
Give again the reason that you understand from the U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel why the Australbus have had tightly controlled bloodlines of their alien origin stretching back for at least 250,000 years.
Once they refined the hybridization process, they had to be very careful as to not disturb that process so they didn't cause anomalies that would result in the same patterns that were seen with their predecessors.
The ones that got sick and died away.
Correct.
What was their disease?
It had to do with the Earth's atmosphere. Earth's atmosphere was not conducive to their genetic makeup. There was a failure in their genome. There was unexpected changes in the Earth's environment, mostly greater levels of radiation from the sun that began to corrupt their DNA. So their salvation would come through splicing their own genes with humans to produce a new species capable of successfully interbreeding. So the Austra albus created many generations of humans before finally achieving the one that they would accept and be able to breed with naturally. That is the modern human. That is one of the reasons why they created us initially.
And why they replaced Neanderthalensis with Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien?
Yes.
If the Austra albus are among us and they are the ones that have the identifiable non-human genes, why is it that in 2014 going forward, this planet seems to be self-destructing? Humans are causing the sixth mass extinction of life in the seas and on land. We are self-destructive as a species in too much war and violence. What is going on if the grays are supposed to be managing us behind the scenes and the Austra albus are supposed to have the superior genetic makeup?
There's this elite caste which represents a secret group of high-powered, selective, wealthy elitists, and all of them being the alien-human hybrid lineage who have manipulated events over time so that we are where we are today. We're seeing the destruction of society. We're seeing the destruction of our environment. This was all by design. This group essentially makes up the number one secret society whose goal is to reduce the human population down to 500 million. So the grays, with regards to managing humans, that was in the beginning. Right now, the human component that works in collusion with the grays, they manage the grays. That's at the Dulce facility. So our military-industrial complex, the military itself, the government, work with the grays. That's where we get a lot of our super-advanced technology.
If the progenitors produced genetically both the Austra albus and the grays, and then the Austra albus created the evolving standing-up primates from Homo erectus up to Neanderthalensis and then Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien to do work for them, to serve them in some capacity on this earth, why is it that the grays made by the progenitors would end up collaborating with Homo sapiens sapien that the grays were supposed to manage?
25,000 years ago, the Anunnaki put the grays on the other side of the planet in the hopes that they would die off. In fact, they infected them with a disease that was designed to kill them, in the hopes that they would die off. The progenitors warned their offspring that the grays could eventually become a threat to them. And they did at one point. According to the colonel and the archaeological tablets that were discovered in Dulce, at one point, humans were worshiping the grays, the Ijiji. And the Anunnaki descendants saw this. They put a stop to it, and they tricked the grays into putting them on the other side of the planet, which is modern-day Dulce.
Do you have any idea how big the underground installation at Dulce, New Mexico is?
Yes, it's a multi-level facility. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of square footage beneath two areas, as a matter of fact, beneath the Archuleta Mesa and Mount Archuleta.
And this vast underground multi-layered area where gray hybrids and clones have lived and been living and are now, does it go back 250,000 years?
The existence of the Dulce facility and the existence of grays at the subterranean Dulce only goes back 25,000 years. It began when grays were placed there by the Anunnaki, the Austra albus, the descendants of the Anunnaki, in the hopes that grays would die off and go away. And ultimately what happened is grays continued to thrive, and they used local human populations to modify grays' own genome, and they subsisted off of the environment and managed to stick around.
What is the purpose of the animal mutilations?
The animal mutilations is the means for them to live. The purpose of the animal mutilations is to extract proteins from the mammary glands. Grays created a specific line of transgenic mammals able to produce proteins free of contaminants that they consume as food. They take the extractions, they concentrate them into a powder form, and they mix it with purified kappa casein made from cow's milk. This is what they use to consume. They've created lines of protein-producing animals to extract these concentrations of glandular proteins to allow them to live.
So on the one hand, we have bloodlines that are concentrated on because the Greys have manipulated certain animal bloodlines to produce the exact kind of protein that the Greys need for food. Is this the same reason why there seems to be a focus on specific human bloodlines in the abductions by Greys, that the bloodlines in the human abductions relate back to the Astra Albus, and that's why the Greys are abducting those certain humans?
It's similar. The Astra Albus require pure blood from their females and glandular excretions from modern humans. From the blood of the females of the lineage that they've constructed, it helps them to sustain their ability to withstand Earth's environment. Through the secretions of the pituitary and pineal glands taken from modern humans, this also acts as a strong drug, helping them from succumbing to mental instability, also caused by environmental exposure.
And so animal life and Homo sapien life on planet Earth act as a pharmacy for the extraterrestrial Greys and the bloodlines of the Astra Albus.
Absolutely. To preserve the genetic lines, not skin color. It has nothing to do with outer appearance. It is the genetic marker. Mm-hmm. And the one interesting thing about all of these people is that they're either royalty or they're extremely wealthy that we see across the spectrum of this secret society.
The progenitors from Sirius B would be coming now because why?
I have no idea why they would be coming. I wonder if Earth was not terraformed through time for the arrival of these progenitors. Maybe there was some sort of communication between the Astra Albus and these Sirius B progenitors. The destruction of the planet that we've seen is part of the plan. Technically, we've terraformed the planet for somebody, or somebody is terraforming the planet for someone. I'm wondering if we are not in the final stages of some execution phase for this terraforming plan for the arrival of aliens from Sirius B.
Great theory. It's a great theory, Linda.
Very interesting question. And tomorrow and in the weekend, I'm going to be extending with a part two, a part three, and a part four from much more of this interview with Anthony. And I'm going to try to have sort of a flow chart so that we can go from Zeta Reticuli 1 to Sirius B to Mars to Earth and try to do it in an organized way so that we have some timeline. And one of the interesting pieces in the book, and I recommend that everyone go to Earth Files and click on the hot link to Anthony's website, which is www.ufohighway, and try to get this book because I think it's extraordinary, and I think that there is a lot in here that relates and brings into focus pieces that I've been exposed to by other people in military and intel leaks. And the question that I've always had in my work, why exactly would extraterrestrials be mutilating animals around this planet and for how long? Well, in Anthony Sanchez's book, UFO Highway, Are You Ready for the Truth? Is the subtitle at the top of the book. He asked the colonel, and here is what the colonel told him. This is from a transcript that he was recording. This is an absolute transcript. It all began when we first observed the Greys abducting cattle for their sustenance efforts. Their craft, remnants of designs created by their progenitors, have the ability to hover silently and use a tractor beam to abduct their subjects or their victims. Oh, trust me, when we first witnessed this, our military went nuts and began devising ways of using this technology for our own purposes, and we did. Many elements of today's stealth aircraft use the same materials that the gray saucer crafts are made of. But let me tell you about the abductions. We observed them first marking cattle, selecting ones that they could tell would be ready for their process. Once they did this, we would see them scan the area, find cows that they had marked, and I know for a fact that we found under black light marked cows when I was doing a strange harvest in Colorado. And then we would watch the grays take the cattle one at a time before they would begin performing their work away from our view inside of their craft. Once they were done and had left, we would sometimes move in. And I can tell you this from one excursion that I personally went on. Immediately afterward, the area smells so bad of chemical signatures. And I've heard ranchers, I've heard other people talk about this ammonia or sulfur smell that has sometimes been in an area where there has been a mutilation or there has been an abduction. We could see that the animals had certain organs removed, cut open by laser or a very sharp instrument. The animals were indeed being used for purposes all of their own, the grays. We were not allowed to question it either. The local rancher community hated this, as it cost them lots of money, practically ruining some family ranching businesses from the repeated abductions and mutilations. And this is why you so often would find these animals in areas inaccessible to people by foot, usually in fields located in very remote areas. And it is also why you would find no traces of struggle or no blood. Plus, we later learned that the blood was usually extracted from the body in addition to most of the glandular organs and reproductive organs. And you all have heard me describe over the years of broadcasts how many ranchers that I interviewed when I was producing A Strange Harvest in Colorado, Wyoming, and New Mexico, where ranchers have even seen the beams come down out of glowing disks in the sky. Some have even seen an animal rise in a beam of light. Others have seen an animal lowered in a beam of light. But those ranchers are terrified of criticism, being ridiculed, and being the brunt of jokes if they stand up and say, this happened on my ranch, I saw this round light, I saw this beam, I saw an animal go up, I saw an animal go down. And the closest that I got for A Strange Harvest was Lou Giroto in the district attorney's office down in Trinidad, Colorado, who with the camera running with me, the crew, and when I ask him who or what is killing and mutilating animals around this planet, he said that he and other investigators had come to the conclusion that the perpetrators were creatures from outer space. Other law enforcement told me the same thing, off the record, would never say it on the record. So now, not only is the hybridization that is current on this planet coming into focus, but the past that takes us back and explains the Anunnaki and what Zechariah Sitchin wrote about in a dozen books.
Makes sense, Linda, all of it.
Yes.
We're going to come back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe. It's time for Conversations with Linda, so get ready to make the call.